This week on RSVMB Update, War's Reckoning begins with free respawns and other PVM and Slayer buffs. Behind the Scenes is also back with a look at February's Slayer update. We also say goodbye to Mod Osborne by looking at some of his greatest hits and unpack the latest livestream. This is RSVMB Update, episode 868, recorded Thursday, February 10th, 2021. The Respawn Reckoning. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. We got a boatload of RS news to discuss this week. Some surprising news out of Jagex, but this week it's just Tannis and myself here. Welcome back.
Thank you, Shane. Yeah, one could say a Bodie McBoater faith load of updates, right?
Yeah. And, you know, I have some interesting thoughts about this that we'll go through in just a couple minutes. I think it's going to be interesting to get your opinion on how you're viewing this and what I am seeing versus what I think the community is seeing on this. But of course, we'll get to that all in good time. If you're joining us for the first time, you can follow along in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com. We're also in Friends Chat. Bits, bytes, in game. I am Shane 12088, and he is Tannis 79. Okay, so we're gonna, of course, get to the big news of Mod Osborne departing Jagex right after the patch notes. But before that, we just have to kind of take stock of the live event that was teased last week: War's Reckoning, mammoth 3-week event running until February 28th. Until then, you're going to, in effect, be having a free death period. And it's not just free death. There's safe deaths, which means that you'll respawn with the items intact instead of having to reclaim them. And this also has the benefit of making it so your familiar doesn't die if you die.
Yeah.
That's interesting, isn't it?
I mean, who needs a death rework when you can just only PVM in certain times of the year?
Right.
No, I mean, I am glad when they do these kinds of things. It does give people a chance that normally wouldn't.
Yeah.
A chance to go and do that. I am much more excited about some of the other bonuses that we'll be talking about coming up. But yeah, this is I'm all in on free death weeks.
All right, and I think one of those bonuses is the double Slayer and double Reaper points.
Now we're talking.
you're of course focusing on the double Slayer points. I am focusing on the double Reaper points, of course. I still can't rack my brain over Slayer. It just feels absurd to me. I don't like the skill. It's something that I feel like I'm dragging myself through each level that I progress. I know I need to get a few Slayer points here and there in order to fill out the things on the tool belt and get the final upgrade to the Slayer helmet and such, but I still feel like I'm dragging myself over the edge, hence why I'm more focused on the Reaper points of this. I assume you're more focused on the Slayer points.
I mean, I just think this is, if you're not 120 or if you just enjoy Slayer, this is a good time.
Or if you're missing some souls.
Yeah, that's another one. The points are great, but if you're 99, and especially if you're starting to do your 120 grind, you probably have all the points and all the stuff that you could ever really
want. Oh, I certainly don't, and I'm 119. Or 118.
What?
Yeah.
Huh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, that's... Oh, okay. Yeah. I don't know how you manage that one, Shane.
I don't know either. I don't know either.
Maybe you did, like, more with... Like, I did a lot with, like, Morrowind, which was the higher end of the
I think
Slayer
I stopped...
Point, yeah.
I stopped back at the woman in the cave phase. I'm forgetting her name.
Yeah. Ken... Curadel.
Curadel. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
You also have reduced marks of war cooldown, as in the amount of time it takes until you can start for regathering marks of war, and reduced invention drain rate for your divine charges by 50%. There's also increased luck on the rare drop table. 50% bonus slayer XP from tasks that not applicable when double XP is active.
That's the one, right? Like, the points are great, but a 50% boost to slayer, I mean, you got to remember that it's one of the skills that it's hard to quantify it by XP per hour, right? It's it's more XP per task and how fast you can get that task. Yeah. So that's a really good one. If you were somebody that was, you know, working towards that 120 right now, you're going to be getting 50% extra and then going into double XP. I mean, this is a good time to do it. Don't forget your Slayer cape for post 99 or
post 99. I think it's the 121 that lets you choose your task. Yeah, it's the 121 that lets you choose your task sometimes.
Okay. Well, get your tickets then.
Yeah.
Your VIP
tickets. And, you know, I have tons of those from when they were giving them out. I basically got one in each task at this point, so I get to have a two-choice task of which one I want if I'm not using a mask, I guess. And even then, you're probably asking, why are you still complaining about Slayer? Well, it's still Slayer, but... anyways, maybe I should write an informer article on this. I feel like I've been needing to write one, but I haven't been able to quantify what the exact problem is to myself.
I need to teach you the art of the mask and getting a good mask rotation, a daily rotation in.
Yeah.
I mean, you can do two or three masks, double your assignments, and walk away with like a mil and a half slayer. I know it doesn't sound like much, but if you do it every day, it adds up.
And, you know, I'll say that two of my very favorite Slayer tasks to do are the Lost Grove creatures.
That's a pretty good task.
And Living Wyverns.
Not so good, but I mean, it has its upsides, I guess.
Yeah. Anyways, we'll talk more about this as we approach double XP and what we're going to be up to. And finally, Elder Overload Golems are available at War's Retreat. Of course, not for Iron Men or hardcore Iron Men or free to play. And just the one caveat on this, that if you want to use a salve to get your anti-fire boost and your poison protection and your prayer renewal with this, you can't overlap with this. And the only way to get rid of this boost is for you to die. So if you're wondering how to get rid of it, if you need to go fight a dragon and you want to use one of your own salves with that rather than just pairing anti-fire with it, well, that's the way. So I just figured we'd make that as a note. And the reason they're doing this, these boosts, is because at the end of the month on February 28th, they are bringing out the new, what looks like Abyssal Slayer creatures in Sintistan that'll require level 95, 105, and 115 Slayer in what they're calling the Abyssal Breach. In particular, from the post on this, and I'll say just exactly what post that is in a moment. It says, quote, "These creatures, it is not their full size, but their overwhelming number that terrifies me. They chase me relentlessly, lashing with their vile tongues. They have no regard for themselves and continue to hunt me even at the brink of death. Sometimes I'm visited by other beasts, fiercer and faster. They move like panthers and drain the essence of all within reach in order to sustain their pursuit. And then the monstrosity, the most terrifying of all. I have only caught glimpses of it, commanding the other creatures as they hunt me. I do not wish to know this one better." And that's from the Abyssal Breach. It's going to be a Slayer area in Sintistan at the end of the month.
Yeah, I'm curious to figure out how that ties in to...
Yeah, it feels like it's going to be kind of tangential, like the mini dig site was there.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems like, I mean, I don't like what the connection is with the what the Abyssal creatures would be.
And you know the environment art they've produced for this and what they've shown on the screenshots looks absolutely wonderful, and it's got some of that new point lighting that we saw previewed on the live stream last week as well. So we're going to be in for a treat when that arrives. And you're probably wondering, where is all this coming from? Well, on Friday, last Friday, we got something we haven't had in a long time. a behind-the-scenes post entitled RuneScape in February, detailing the Shadows over Sentistan and the Abyssal Breach, War's Reckoning, and Double XP Live. We got a behind-the-scenes post for February.
It's back.
And this is, I feel like it's a behind-the-scenes post, but it's a different behind-the-scenes post than what we would have come to expect in the past. I feel like this is highlighting it in such a way that they're able to talk about what's going to be there, but they're not necessarily revealing too much, right?
No, I don't think so. I think they also had, like, this was, they could make it look like this month has, you know, it's pretty packed. So it's a good month to try to bring back behind the scenes and try it with a little sparser format than what they used to do.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, I probably a better balance.
And you said something there that I want to touch on, but just in the realm of speculation before we move on to that, I would love for nothing more than to have a way to have a useful Abyssal Whip again. And I mean, I guess we kind of do have that with the Tier 85 Lava Whip, but I don't necessarily know what the offhand is at Tier 85 that you would use would be involved in that. So I know some people have been speculating on whips, buying them up, or trying to farm them in the sense that these will be the spiritual successor to the Abyssal Demons that everybody loves.
Yep, because no one... That always works out for people.
Absolutely.
When speculation is happening.
Yeah. All right. So you touched on something that I want to actually go back to. And you mentioned the fact that with this, it paints a picture of what's happening in February. And what were your exact words that you said? That it makes it feel like there's more than there is, right? Or
yeah.
Is that the sense you're going for?
Essentially, yeah. They picked a good month to bring in that that format where they can leave out a little bit less of the detail that they used to use while making it look like there's a lot going on. Because I mean, in reality, there is stuff going on, but it's a good month to pick. Because you're already condensed, just the way things fall in, and you've got a 3-week War Reckoning, you've got a 10-day double XP, we've got new creatures. I mean,
yeah,
it's almost like what if you're putting on a production or something, you know, you're kind of like hot-shotting the talent, right? Like,
yeah,
loading it up. Yeah,
that's exactly it. And I had the creeping suspicion, and people are gonna hate me for this. My creeping suspicion is that if you did these War's Reckoning type events like this with the 3-week free death cost period, and you paired them with the double XP, or maybe you even ran them the month before the double XP. I'm beginning to question again if you even need a death rework. And we went through, arguments on that before about how there's absurd cases where certain things, if you die, them become less expensive. And sure, there are those little edge cases like that that definitely should be ironed out. But it really raises the question if you do need a full-fledged rework like that after you iron out those edge cases.
Yeah, I think the one thing that we learned, you know, just from our other guests and, you know, feedback in the community is just that for us, well, and you're doing more PVM now than you've ever done, but even then, this kind of rework would actually be okay for us. It would be fine. But for people that's their gameplay, that's their enjoyment, they want to do it every day, that's their thing,
yeah,
I don't think it's enough for them.
Yeah,
at least they don't feel that it's enough for them.
Because what I've heard of a lot happening is people just pushing themselves further, and I fully intend to do that this weekend as well in terms of what they would normally not do, either because the psychological barrier is gone or the cost barrier is gone. And since December, my death costs have gone from about 700K to 1.5 mil, and in some cases now upwards of 1.9 mil, approaching 2 million. Just to put this out there, where I'm at death cost-wise. And this isn't with anything absolutely crazy yet. So, you can see how these things might start to add up if you wanted to push yourself in a certain direction. But, and, you know, there's an argument to also be made that was touched on in the live stream this week, that if that's what people are trying to do on these death weeks, that maybe then looking at practice mode, for example, is something else that can be retuned, is something that should be done. So there's lots of questions that come up with it. So I think that's one part why we're seeing War's Reckoning, is to, in effect, see how much PVM is done, how much money is missed from the economy not sinking out these death costs during these 3 weeks, right? And then you pair it with a double XP, where you see how much money you sink, either through your sink skills like construction and invention, of course, right? Mm-hmm. Or how much money you bring in with your alchemical skills, right? So I think that, once again, this could be another experiment where, in running these back-to-back, it's all very deliberate.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I think this does two things. I mean, one, it's great for the data and the analytics. They still obviously need more than the last few times. But the other thing it does is it also kind of like, it's a little bit of a pressure valve, you know, for, I mean, 3 weeks is a pretty good period. That's pretty long time.
And it's a test to see if you can effectively put out a headlining update that's three Slayer creatures, an environment, and their associated drops, and then for the rest of the month, just run yourself on live events. Because if you look at the patch notes we've had this week, or rather this month, they've been very small so far.
Yeah. To me, this makes it rather, so it's not that there's actually more content when you're talking about a 3 week event, but it kind of almost feels that way, right? Like,
exactly.
They're the old thought. Jedi mind trick.
Yeah. Right. That was my thought, is that, you know, this doesn't feel too bad when you look at the way everything is teed up. But when you split it out into individual pieces of content, there's really not that much. But you look at everybody who's playing RS this month, everybody's going to be busy, whether it's with the PVM stuff leading up to double XP, the double XP preparations that are going on, or even, dare I say it, trying to farm the new Valentine's Day stuff that's on Treasure Hunter this week. So
I'm drawing the line at calling Treasure Hunter gameplay.
Well, no, I lump Treasure Hunter in with the live event stuff.
I got you. Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. That was interesting too. I mean, it's funny, 'cause remember I was just saying, I hope it's something like that hammer deal that used to be, gave like a percent bonus, and it was area percent bonus.
Right, and that's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on to that then, because they're active now, and just like they did with the Halloween events, you have the vodments available now, where you have the chance to get the Scepter of Enchantment that they last had in 2016, but now it's tradable, but it will become untradable on use. You can also get the Oil of Enchantment, which is tradable charges for the Scepter, and the Scepter's Valentine's Day Slam bonus will grant 4% XP boost and the Bonfire HP boost for 24 hours, plus a 2% XP boost and 2 hours of the Bonfire HP boost for those around you.
That's what I was trying to say. Slam. It's a slam bonus. Yeah. It's not a, I think hammer. Like, no, it's
same
a
thing. Slam bonus. Same thing.
Yeah.
There's also the Coin of Enchantment that works the same way as the Scepter, but it's a 2% XP buff for you and 1% for everybody else without bonfire boosts. And the new Heartments as they're called. I called them Vaudmints, Valentine's Day Oddments, but Heartmints is the official term. You'll, of course, get prismatic stars and lamps, masquerade outfits, the heart balloon, a bunch of flowers, the hater's medallion, the lover's medallion, the crown of the fallen, goblin butler pet, devotion sprite pet, loved up loot beam, scrumptious title, forlorn title, masquerade dance, efficiency emote, no more emote, down to earth emote, and the loved up emote running from the 10th to the 14th, and heart mints must be used by February 21st. You know, I just looked at standard oddments when I logged in earlier to check that thing you told me to check for lamps. I didn't actually look and see how many heart mints I had yet on here. I'll have to check those after as well. You after any of these in particular?
No, but I can think of swaths of different areas that could that should get the haters medallion upon release. Yeah, like, you know, the place that we that shall not be named. And like every account should just receive a haters medallion.
Now the price check system doesn't have it in currently, but according to GE Value, the Scepter of Enchantment is currently hovering at about 47 mil.
Well, I guess I guess
here's another Treasure Hunter rare, because I assume you're going to be able to keep this as a cosmetic when you use it. Though it does become untradeable when you use it, so I don't know if you want to spend 47 million for a cosmetic.
Yeah, but then again, maybe, because look at some of the, I was going to try to compare it to walks, but I guess those are animations, it's a little bit different, but.
Yeah, because you can always show those off.
Yeah. I don't know, Fashionscape is a thing. So, you know.
I'd imagine there's going to be lots of people running around with these come 14. So. All right. Let's continue on then. We already mentioned Double XP Live, 18th to the 28th. I know I mentioned it, but just that's the official date with this. So, I imagine we'll be having a good time with that. And I guess we can announce this now on February 19th. We'll be running our round table, and since it is Double XP, we always do open these up to the public. If you are interested in seeing what the Patreon supporters get access to on a month-to-month basis, now's your chance. Come visit us, and we will share the love, so to speak. 4 days after, 5 days after Valentine's Day. So I guess that makes sense, doesn't it?
Sure. Come see how the sausage is made.
Yeah, that's right. Maybe we should make some actual sausage.
Hey, I figured you had some recipes, Shane.
No, unfortunately, I don't. Right. All right, patch notes. General feedback from last month, Ninja Strike, on the tooltips. They clarified that crystal shields also worked for the attune crystal weaponry's dual wield effects. Clarified that the bone blowpipe's poison damage is going to be doubled, and clarified that the bonus ability from bonus ability damage from Bane ammunition depends on the ability used, which absolutely makes sense when you think about it. Fleshed out the blood amulet's tooltip with more details regarding damage, cooldown, and chance of activation, and fixed a typo on the Ring of Wealth's tooltip. So there's that. Crocodile Paths and Het's Oasis will now offer slightly better agility XP if you take the Crocodile shortcut. Players in the Oasis are now informed via chat box when a new Crocodile Path appears. And once again, this is doing the same sort of thing that we see in the Heffen agility course. So that's good. Prayer Powders now have their tooltips stating their effects. Very nice. So you don't need to.
Yeah, that's a good.
You don't need to look it up on the wiki. Naming of dyed items from the Elder God Wars has been made more consistent. Process's health bar now correctly clears when leaving the encounter area. That one was sticky since about November. And as a frequent visitor to Krosis, I will also say, I'm sure this has been reported, and it would be nice to get this one fixed. But there is a bug sometimes where if you get a drop at Krosis, it will appear on the floor instead of inside the chest. So the general rule is that if you're at Krosis and you or anyone in your group gets a broadcastable rare item, make sure you check that it didn't wind up on the floor, because that would be bad.
Know someone that got a drop that way.
Oh! How bad was it? Or how bad could it have been?
It was pretty bad. I think it was a top.
Oh!
Yeah.
Yikes. Yikes. And, you know, we've reported this numerous times. I'm fairly certain other people have as well. So I don't know if it's not been seen or if it's just something that's taken a little while to patch in, but I feel like that one could definitely use another look out there. Rack and Rune will now correctly have their damage reduced by the Energizing perk. And in the exploit of the week, the Maul of Omens can no longer be traded. I'm taking it that you don't know what that one's about and how much of a problem this potentially was.
I actually don't.
All right. So you enter into a Virago fight, and throughout the various phases of Virago, you get pieces of the Maul, and you put this Maul together by the end of the fight, and that's what you use to finish off Virago. The Maul has a finish off option that at the end of it, there's an achievement for it. That's what deals the final blow on Virago in the instance. But with this, there was actually a bug where that Maul that was used to get the final kill on Virago could have been smuggled out of the instance.
Ooh, neat.
And people were smuggling it out, charging absurd amounts of money for it, scamming people with it, saying it was a rare item. And if somebody got the item, if they traded the item and they paid someone for it, if they clicked on the item or tried to put it into their bank, the Maul of Omens would disappear. And then you'd be out however many millions or potentially billions you paid for it.
Oh, ouch.
Yeah. And apparently it was a fairly widespread scam. The people in the PVM Encyclopedia Discord had to actually put out a warning for this last week. So
it's like, but who has enough money to want to buy something like that and yet doesn't know what it
is? I mean, you don't read the news posts. You just assume it's a new rare item that's been put into game. You have 200 mil laying around. You think, oh, this is going to be a rare discontinued item. You buy it. You accidentally click it or try to bank it. Poof, there it goes. I mean, obviously. I
wonder if anyone tried to keep it.
Well, no. From what I understand, if you even just clicked on it, it would disappear.
Oh, okay. So it never even made it.
Option. And it doesn't even appear on your character, because when you're in the Virago fight, you just click it to finish Virago off when you're at the end of it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. We should go to Virago one day.
Like, you should stream that and I'll watch.
No, I mean, you should go.
Can't go to Virago.
Sure you could. I'm sure we could ask David and we could find a way to make it work for you.
Well, yeah, maybe let me borrow some of that tank stuff and put me in a corner and eat.
only if you feel comfortable, of course.
It's all, you know, I will say this, that has always looked like a funner fight to me than like some of the other
stuff. Oh, really? Interesting.
Yeah, I actually think that looks like a funner fight than Rax
Rax is creeping its way down on my list. It was what I started with, but it's working its way down.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen people do it, and like I said, it looks like it might be a little funner.
Yeah. Speaking of this, and, you know, just to go back to the Wars Reckoning bandwagon here for a minute, What bosses would you like to try in this free death period?
Well, I haven't done much matriarchs. Not that that would be dangerous or anything, but it's always fun to do something. It's always better to do something new on a free death week. I'd like to try Raksha too, because I think that might be fun. Otherwise, I can't think of anything like I'd want to do. There's a lot of stuff I would go to do with people. Like if I had a friend go in the next, I would go and try to do that. Or, I would go and try to do Beastmaster if I had people that like would take me.
Right.
I don't think I could do the other one.
Yeah. But okay.
Yeah, but I would definitely like to try the Beastmaster again.
And maybe this is something we should be doing, because I know there was a question about that, and if there's anybody listening to this that would find that interesting and would be up for that kind of thing, let us know and we'll organize something. We still got 2.5 weeks to do it from this point of recording, so. And that's why I asked, because I've fallen into a trend of PBM bosses that I enjoy doing, but I think it'd be interesting to kind of just spread things out a bit, and take it from there and see where you want to go. Interesting experience, because I remember it was, and don't take this the wrong way, it was damn near funny when we tried to do the first Elite Dungeon with you.
Well, I'm sure, and it was even probably just as comical trying to watch me do a Raxer, because that didn't work out well either. But those are just ones that I think sound interesting to me. You might get in there and be like, yeah, that's not so much. But those are the ones that I would take advantage of having a free dev week just to try it, give it a shot, see how it goes.
All right.
Yeah.
Fair enough. And I also I'll extend this out to anybody listening too. What is everybody who is listening going to be working on? If you're hearing this and you want to comment in any of the comments or any of the areas that we have available, I'd be interested to hear that as well. But there's going to be lots of opportunities for that, and I'm going to move on, and we're going to thank our Patreon supporters right now. This week in particular, I'd like to thank Amos Reed, Andrew C., Arvid Zell, Big Huge Rat, Bryflex, Christian S., Chunk the Monk, Cook Me Plonks, Diana, Drama Free, Duramax, Elo Matey, Flaws of Man, Free Milk, Jacob R., Jade Gizmo, Jason S., Jeebus, Jesse W., Kesky Plays, Ling01, Nate the Great, Nick G, Patty the Architect, Parnassius, Ren Hawk, Ricky A, Samuel FL, Skiotan, Scott DS, Seth W, Stabiv, Taylor B, The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V, Zant, and Zazakon. Thank you everybody for your support. It truly means the world to us. As we mentioned, next weekend we'll be having our monthly round table on Double XP Live, and that's of course the time when we all gather and we discuss. We just have a nice general chat about RuneScape. We had a good one a few weeks back in January, and I look forward to doing this one again. But of course, we also have our monthly bits available as well at patreon.com/rsbnb. For as little as $1 a month, you gain access to the entire back catalog of those, and those are deep, 1 hour long specific podcast episodes that go deep into a single topic. Lots of good things have been discussed. Last month we talked about the skill reworks and what skills we would rework. We wound up choosing woodcutting, thieving, and fire making amongst specific options. So if those or any other kind of investigative podcast episodes to you sound interesting, you can check them out at patreon.com/rsbnb. We also do have a VIP rank, where you get a special VIP rank on Discord, and I mentioned on the podcast at the start of the month and access to high-quality stereo versions of the show. And we also do have the Insider tier for $5 a month, where you get a shout-out each and every week on the podcast and gain exclusive access to the outtakes that we use to make the clip show, in addition to everything else. And of course, we are working on the new, on the wonderful new $200 project that we previewed at the last roundtable. It's a piece of art, I will say. So if you haven't watched that roundtable, go back and watch that. Or if you want to see what all that was about, subscribe at patreon.com/RSBNB. But suffice to say, people will be getting a mail-out gift at some point in the future on this, probably in the March-April period, based on how things are looking right now. But, of course, beyond that, we also have the Hot Ones Challenge, where we will be subjecting our taste buds to a whole range of spice. And I know you're looking forward to that one in particular.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I'm just waiting on my shipment of Canadian EpiPens. Just in case.
I honestly don't think you're going to need that, but if you think you will, then that's fine.
No, I'm sure a tall glass of milk will suffice.
It sounds like fun. If you want to help us get there, check us out at patreon.com/RSBNB. Thanks so much, everybody.
Thanks, guys.
All right. So we mentioned we had big news out of Jagex. Mod Osborne has departed the company and is picking up a new role at Square Enix, which is another AAA gameplay publisher, and will be lending his work there as a designer, senior designer. And we thought, you know, Mod Osborne was on the show before, and he has touched so many things in RS. He started as an editor writing the quest help section on the website, but he went up to lead designer for RuneScape 3, and he's touched so many projects. And we thought, let's just go over some of Mod Osborne's greatest hits were in the past.
You know, before we do that, though, you know what? It's kind of neat for me is Square Enix made my favorite game of all time. You know, besides RuneScape, which is the Final Fantasy franchise and Final Fantasy VII. And now Mod Osborne has worked at my two favorite games in the entire world.
There you go.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah.
It is kind of interesting how things like that work out.
Yeah.
All right. So I think I want to start with the biggest of all, Prif. If we go back to 2014 and when Prif beat out Invention for the project, of course we had Plague's End, but he was heavily, heavily involved in the design itself of Prif, appearing on live streams numerous times as Mod Elfborn, answering Q&As and showcasing what Prif was going to look like. And I remember the hype build up in that time, just us building up to this launch of this city that had taken at that point 10 years for it to arrive. And I think I put this one first on the list of things to talk about with him. Because we can look at things that changed lore-wise in-game, right? But I think one of the things that had the biggest impact on how players played, specifically at the mid to high levels, was Prif.
Prif fundamentally changed a lot of the meta of the game. It changed the way we play, but the reason I think even more that it has to be, you know, at the top here is because this, at least from the public eye, was Mod Osborne's baby. This was, you know, he was just so instrumental in making this a reality, that you know, it's something I associate with him, like, right off the top.
Yeah, and I mean, there's even the Elfborn title that you can get in-game, which is, you know, Mod Osborne the Elfborn, right?
Yep.
So, and, you know, you're 100% right that it wouldn't have come out the way it did if not for him. And there's just so many things in that city that completely changed the way we play, from the Motherlode Maw to the combination potions to the Max Guild, before the mining and smithing rework, the corrupted ore, all the extra farming stuff. Saren Stone, Saren Spirits, Saren Stones?
Yeah. Oh. Right?
Which ones are you talking about?
The ones in the mining district.
That's what I said. The corrupted ore. Is that what they are? I'd call them corruptive ore.
Sarin stones.
Okay, fair enough. Right, yeah. You have to cleanse them.
Yeah.
Right. Corrupted ore is what you get from them. Have an agility course. An agility course that's not as click intensive as everything else. We could go on and on about this. In terms of how it changed the game and how the players wanted this so badly at the time that there's a lot of question at least and worry at least on my end that, you know, invention might have won out. And we have talked about how things would have looked if invention did win out. But I think it goes without saying that Priff was probably in the top three of the main pivot points in the last decade for RS.
Easily. Yeah.
And that's definitely falls under his greatest hits category.
Yep.
Another one of those huge pivot points was, of course, The World Wakes. The start of the Sixth Age. That was a quest he was deeply involved in as well.
It doesn't get much bigger in the world of Quest than The World Wakes, right?
Yeah.
Because you got to look at just what that opened up. I mean, yeah, we opened up the Sixth Age, but we also opened up the... you know, the world events and just this really rich story that, I mean, it's just now starting to wind down.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, we don't know specifically why he left, whether it was the 15 years or if there was other factors or just a better opportunity. But in terms of winding down the Sixth Age, winding down the gods and the Elder Gods storyline, that seems like a good point to kind of, you know, just pin the feather in the hat and move on, so to speak. And, you know, the Sixth Age itself has been controversial, but I think in the sense of storylines, you ask somebody, would you rather go back to the, you know, the tiny, you know, story of the week kind of quests where you have an odd little thing here or there that pops up? Or would you rather have us on this, you know, serialized story push that we've been on since 2013? I know I don't want to go back. I can't speak for you or anybody else, but I think that the Sixth Age has been a good way to force RS to grow up.
Yeah, it at least, if nothing else, you don't know what you don't know, and this gave people another way to view RuneScape, and that it could have an overarching story. It could have... you know, it could look more like a more modern game instead of, you know, little quest here and there, a little puzzle here and there, that kind of thing. Which those have their place, right? Don't get me wrong, they have their place. But no, and even if we see that going forward, I think we'll see it in the same thing, but maybe in a modified way. Maybe we'll see this more by region instead of by super arching god, everything's going to end life or death, you know, every quest.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it'll be still big, but like regionally or human.
Right. And they said that's generally the sense of what they want to do going forward.
Yeah. And I, you know, and maybe that's where you find the right mix where you can have little bottle quests, you know, in a location, and then bigger storyline quest. That's actually pretty common in, dare I say it, expansions and other MMOs.
Yeah, we will talk about that. We will talk about that. That is on this list as well. But we also need to mention Dimension of Disaster, the 200th questing game. That was a huge hallmark. While he wasn't one of the developers on it, he wrote a good deal of dialogue for it. And the 200th quest at the time was really a celebration of questing in RuneScape in the modern era of where we were, Quest 200, with that, because it had a lot to live up to with the 100th quest recipe for disaster. And everybody always looks back at Dimension of Disaster as one of those things that was a truly unique RuneScape thing that you do, because it was, of course, a replayable quest. There were some fun things that you could get for it, upgrade-wise. I'm looking at you, Darklight, amongst other things. And there are, of course, Master Quest requirements, and the dialogue to go with that was just so tongue-in-cheek RuneScape that it is one of his hallmarks as well that he did work on.
Yeah, I mean, how can you see an exploding cow and not think that Mott Osborne had some kind of hand in that? it was so fun. And I almost forgot that, yeah, that one does have that tongue-in-cheek dialogue that is hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Next up is The Needle Skips. And this is something that he worked on with Maud Krista, who also has left the company previously. And the reason everybody likes The Needle Skips is that it wasn't your traditional linear quest. It was, in effect, a search, word search, where you would search the area surrounding the needle, surrounding the house for keywords, and it would uncover various aspects of lore. And I remember us doing that quest and talking about this, and there was, I forget who said it on the panel at the time, but they said this was the first time that a RuneScape quest had sent shivers down their spine.
Yeah, well, had to been either Diana or Syria.
Yeah, I think it was one of those two, probably. And because of that, I think everybody always holds Needle Skips as one of those quests that's just always out there. And I don't think you'll ever be able to meet or surpass it. In terms of just the amount of impact that you felt when you were doing it. Just because you, in effect, forged your own way through it. And that's what made it so unique, is that was the first time that we had such a thing.
Well, and I mean, what can you say about the Needle Skips that we haven't already said? But one thing that the Needle Skips reminds me of, and a lot of these quests, look at the Needle Skips, The World Wakes, Dimension of the Damned. We are losing a very innovative storyteller.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because these all innovated quest in a way that was different. They were very different, right? Than what we'd seen in the past. And the Needle Skips is just this example of everyone riding horses and someone coming through in a Model T. Huh?
That's a good way of putting it. That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
And then you said, what else is there to say about the Needle Skips in your Model T reference? Well, what do you do after the Model T? You do You Are It.
And yet again, completely its own thing comes out of
Again, he wasn't a developer on it, but he designed this quest because it's a quest that's effectively a clue scroll.
Uh-huh.
Filled with puzzles, which is a quester's quest, at least in my perspective from it. And because of that, you wind up with this adventure that you have no idea where it's going to end. And just in case anybody hasn't done it, and since it's not quest week here, I won't say what the actual end of it is, but you know, if you haven't done this quest, take some time this weekend and go do it. It's one of those quests that you definitely should do.
It's a lot of fun, and that is from someone that spent a very long time cutting down a lot of trees.
And you don't even like clue scrolls.
And no, I don't do clue scrolls, but with such good storytelling, and I wanted to know about certain spoiler thingies in the quest. It was just, yeah.
And the quest is actually, both of these two, Needle Skips and You Are It, actually did pull on, were pulled on in Desperate Times and Desperate Measures.
Hmm.
So, once again, this is all part of this world building. And you mentioned that the game is losing a innovative storyteller, somebody who tells stories in a different way and iterates on what a quest is, right?
Yeah.
But what they're also losing is a wonderful world builder. And this isn't to say that there aren't people in Jagex that can do this, but you are losing somebody who did it in such a unique way and has had such a huge influence on RS since, I think, what, 07 or 08, I think he joined?
Yeah. Yeah, at least.
So, that's just the impact of everything that we've talked about so far. Prif, The World Wakes, Dimension of Disaster, The Needle Skips, You Are It. Now, of course, those are the big things. Those are the things that everybody, of course, remembers. But there's also little things around the edges that we're going to mention as well. Some of them funny, some of them not. The post bag from the hedge feature. Everybody was always invited to send messages to Posty Pete. But it was later revealed that Maude Osborne was actually the narrative writer writing for all these NPCs. So anytime the cryptic chaos elemental spoke with vague previews of what was coming down the pipe, that was Maude Osborne writing. And you look into the post bag from the hedge of all the different entries of it when they did that, there were some really, really unique and funny messages, lighthearted messages that came through from RuneScape's various NPCs as a result of this. So, once again, people always say bring back post bag from the hedge. I don't know if you could bring it back to the degree they did. They used to have it now, but hey, they could try, but it probably wouldn't be as good, I'd say.
It definitely would never be the same. It wouldn't be the same.
No, it wouldn't. All right. So, we've talked about Maude Osborne's highlights, and, you know, this was a difficult time for everybody. Back in 2017, the summer of 2017, Menaphos had just come out as our first expansion, and let's just say that people were upset about how Menaphos hit, and the community, by and large, really didn't like how expansions were looking. So as a result of that, we have the famous, or perhaps infamous, Maude Osborne hostage video from July of 2017. And I remember, I forget what we were looking this up for. I think we were looking this up for our retrospective on Menaphos. And it was 3 weeks after that, and it was definitely after this. It was unfinished business release strategy update.
I think I'm the one that said this looks like a hostage video.
Because it starts off by saying, first of all, I'd like to apologize for going a bit quiet in this past month. You've all had plenty to say about Menaphos achievements and a few other updates, and it might have seemed like we were tucking our heads in the sand or popping off to the pub. But they were deep in discussion as an entire team with this. And the reason you said a hostage video is that, we give them props for doing this, but a lot of the facial expressions he had on his face does look like he was being held at knife point by certain members of the community. And we call it that, but honestly, following from that, as much as we would have liked to have seen expansions continue, I think unfinished business with some things like Invention Batch 2 set us off for what we had in 2018 with things like the Deep Sea Fishing Hub, the Clue Scroll rework, and the player-owned farm, of course, to know what kind of updates really resonate with people that don't need to fall in that expansion bandwagon. So as much as this hostage video was a bad point for Jagex, it was an important inflection point, I feel, for setting things up on the right direction prior to the Maude Warden era. So it was important, despite being a bad time. And I think the way they handled that and the way he handled it as lead designer was so very important with that. And it's not necessarily a highlight per se, is one of the best things that ever happened to RS. But it was a damn important thing, and that's why it's on this list here.
It's a memorable thing.
Oh, it is. And, you have to do is look at the thumbnail for that video.
I was just, at any time, expecting him to say, they're treating me well.
Blink three times. Joking aside, there was one joke that was initially intended to be a piece of content that was going to come out. It was something he wanted to do, but it never made its way into game, and that was bank bitters. Which is absolutely hilarious when you think about it. For anybody unaware, bank bidders was the idea that they were bringing around. It was shown at RuneFest 2016, later canceled in July 2017, that the idea behind this is that people would be able to bid on the banks of banned players.
Yeah. This was one of those, you were up way too late one night watching Storage Wars and thought, yeah, that could work.
And it would have been a time limited 2 week event, and obviously with the raffle kind of element behind it, bidding, this morphed into things like the raffle and whatnot, and other lucky dip events that we've had since. And obviously now you're not bidding on people's lost banks, which is downright hilarious when you think of it. But you know, based on what you said in the past, this is something I think you'd be up for.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. I think back to when we were having our Elite Dungeon discussion last year, and you said you were for civil asset forfeiture.
Whoa, no, not me. me. No, very anti that.
Really? I could have sworn you said you wanted that for people who abuse the Elite Dungeon system.
Oh, yes, in game. I'm a big proponent of civil asset forfeiture. Yes. Yes.
I was talking in game. You thought I meant real life.
Yeah, I'm like, whoa, my liberal bells are ringing. I'm like, dang it, dang no.
Yeah. Anyways, we kind of just had to end it off with a bit of a humorous one and say that with all this, I think Mod Osborne will definitely be missed. Had a huge impact on the game and the entire community. As things progressed with that, and we wish him all the best at his new ventures with Square Enix.
Yep, absolutely.
All right. Modcast General Q&A Part 2. This one focused a lot on combat. I'm just going to run through some of these questions here because I think this was an interesting one, but not as interesting as the previous week because it wasn't nearly as strategic as that one was. But I think we can still pull some things from this and have a bit of a discussion about some of these questions. A lot of the questions were just very basic. Are we going to get this, though, at some point in the future? So I'm not going to go through most of those. I'm only going to go through ones that we can really have a discussion on. We do have full notes of this live stream if you want to find those in our show notes at update.rsbnb.com. Okay. So I think the first one where we want to have a bit of a discussion around is, can the Volcanic Trapper outfit be updated to have a more of an effect on Big Game Hunter? And they say rather than putting everything into one outfit, they could put it into a specific Big Game Hunter outfit or just offer more loot for Big Game Hunter. Or perhaps it could be something that you unlock with Big Game Hunter that adds an extra benefit to that outfit. And the reason I think this is interesting, and they pointed this one point out, is that people who do Big Game Hunter actually wear the woodcutting outfit there to get logs quicker. But
see,
go ahead.
I was just gonna say, like, I like the last choice the best, because you could get it from Big Game Hunter, use it for Big Game Hunter. Big Game Hunter is more of a skilling boss than the hunter skill to begin with. It's very different.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say. They said they could put it into an outfit or just offer more loot from Big Game Hunter. And I was thinking, if you're going to buff the loot tables on this, now that we have the template of what Krosis is as a skilling boss, maybe it's time to make Big Game Hunter a legit solo skilling boss. With loot tables and various mechanics to it, right?
Yeah. I mean, in many ways, it...
Like, it's halfway there.
Yeah. Yes.
So, and with that, you could really then say, maybe wear this specific Big Game Hunter outfit, or maybe you wear the Hunter outfit with an addition you get from Big Game Hunter, or maybe you elect to continue wearing the woodcutting outfit, depending on what aspect of it that you want to focus on, kind of the same thing you do when you go to Krosis. Mm-hmm. So, I think this is an interesting area to look at, and you know, I could be one of the huge revitalization points for Hunter, because I've complained a lot in skilling on my alt is that I feel like Hunter has no reason to exist, minus big game Hunter.
Well, I mean, that can be said for a lot of skills, but it doesn't. Like, I mean, at the end of the day, like, there's nothing really that useful that you can make a buck on or anything. I mean, I guess Crystal Chims came and went, and you know, other things have came and went.
Yeah, the Steel Chompos and whatnot.
Yeah, but there hasn't. The last thing that was profitable was. Yeah.
And the powders.
Yeah, I just. But yeah.
It's just a question of finding Hunter's spot.
Right.
The next interesting question was, will Jagex ever team up with celebrities like Lady Gaga and make cosmetics?
I hope not.
The answer,
only thing that could have been, okay, go ahead.
The answer was probably not, but perhaps maybe 90s era UK TV presenters? Like, what?
Yeah, okay. Well, the only thing that could have been worse is if they had asked, are we going to have NFT cosmetics?
You know, I thought of that when I was listening to this, and I was glad that nobody mentioned that.
Thank God, I know. We cannot allow it, Shane. That is a hill we must die on.
but one thing suggested from the chat, and I feel like this is out of the Fortnite, they said they'd like a Backstreet Boys dance if they're going to do pop culture influence.
From a pop culture reference from when they started 20 years ago?
Yeah, they'd like a Backstreet Boys dance emote.
From what, from 20 years ago?
Yeah. They'd like to have that added to game. That's what the chat said. A Backstreet Boys.
That should be, but you know, like that could be easy. Just make another music box with Backstreet Boys,
and then dance to it.
Yeah, I mean, that's an easy one.
And I feel like that opens us up to a whole fortnight of dance things.
We already have Thrilla.
That's true. And maybe this is the way to go if they were to do references like that. In any case, I'm going to move on from that question. Could an on-off toggle be added for complete tomes in archaeology after 200 mil, or at least let them be disassembled for ancient components? And apparently this has been something that's brought up internally, specifically by Mod Ryan, and they're going to bring this up again for people who want to continue training archaeology past 200 mil.
I mean, it would be a nice little quality of life fix for, you know, maybe 100 people.
Yeah, and see, that's the thing. You have to question how much benefit this would add, and maybe at that point you just make the tomes disassemblable and have them give those components, so then you can either choose the XP or the component, because I think they're rare enough that it would be no problem having them disassembled.
Yeah, I mean, couldn't you even put an item in the Chronote store and just have that would automatically break them up?
Yeah, that could be another way of doing it as well. Why don't the mini quests give quest points and keys, and specifically the very long mini quests? And this comes our favorite word, Dennis. Expectations. They don't want to raise expectations that something they'd class as a quest is too short to be a quest. And that's why with Het's Oasis and the other mini quests we've had around the Elder God Wars, and initially with the Once Upon a Time content, they elected to call them mini quests rather than actual quests, is because they didn't want to raise expectations by giving something quest points and a key when it would have been so tiny.
I mean, it makes sense. I don't even know why that's a question, though. You know what I mean? Like, the reason you don't get quest points is because it's a mini quest.
Yeah, and that
some mini quests are annoying.
And that led to the next question. that there's no clear expectation from the player side, at least, on what a quest is versus a mini quest.
Do you think that, though? I mean, you're more immersed in, you know, in the questers, but I feel like there's a line. We are pretty good at drawing that line.
Yeah. Like, I would have called Eye of Het Part 1 a mini quest, mainly because it was your traditional fetch kind of quest that you'd see in another game, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Eye of Het Part 2, I feel, was an actual quest because it advanced lore and story very heavily with that, with what we had. So if that's I was true. To draw the line personally, I'd say if it's going to be something fetch related, that's just, you know, in effect, taking the player on a bit of an adventure to go grab something and maybe showing them something, call that a mini quest. But if it's something that is potentially advancing the player's story, like Eye of Het 2 did, or dare I say Battle of the Monolith, that could potentially be called a quest.
That one could be a quest.
Yeah, and, you know, just add maybe a... Because you did have the focus when you would go see the Tsar, right?
Well, the only reason I think that was labeled a mini quest is because it was split over 4 weeks,
yeah.
Right? If that was all put together, it would have to be a
quest, yeah.
It'd have to be a quest, yeah.
Yeah, and then you just have to question with that, you really want to have a quest where you're spending that much time in a instanced tower defense battle like that, right?
Yeah, well, I question my sanity.
Yeah, but that was a different issue. That was a different issue.
It was.
Will Magma Tempest crit again? We see the Mage Master race raising questions here again. of course, Magma Tempest is the ability that came from the Zuck fight and had to be redesigned when it came out because it was critting too much on its interactions with the Fractured Staff of Armadale. And they said that Tsunami and that Fractured Staff of Armadale were part of the reason why Magma Tempest can't crit. That's not to say that it won't get synergies again in the future, but it's not going to have them right now because it's too powerful otherwise. Which, okay. When you think about it, makes total sense.
Yeah, I mean, so... I still think it's... Yeah, I mean, and it's still powerful.
Yeah. Now, this next one I didn't get to ask David about, but I would absolutely have loved to get his input on this. And maybe I misheard wrong, but the question was, will there be imbued rings from the Rex Matriarch stuff, like the Rex Matriarch's rings? And he said, the problem is that these rings kind of suck, according to Mod Sponge. Which is interesting. When you look at what we talked about in our end-of-year PVM special, that at least two of the rings are very popular, the Magic one and the Generalist one. But they just to get back to the actual question, he said that if imbuing was to be done, they'd like to look at how the imbuing process works and, in effect, redefine it, which makes sense since it's tied to Tekkiet raids, and it's, you know, it's a very high price of entry for imbuing rings, so.
Yeah.
Will there be tier 92 set effects for Elite Tectonic and Serenic? And the answer to this is that they could do this in the future because right now they can't release another tier 92 magic power armor set because it would kill Elite Serenic effectively. So Elite Serenic would have to get its own specific wheelhouse, and then the new one that would come out would also have to get its own specific wheelhouse as not to kill Elite Serenic. So in general, there's no plans for this, but there's a good interest for it within the company to do such a thing, which at the end of the day, I think personally would only help players because there's very few places where it's economical to actually use the full tier 92 Elite Serenic. Just given the amount of cost that you have to put into keeping it up. So.
Yeah.
Fixes for summoning pathing. They said that they need to have a huge rework to the way familiars work on this. The person who asked the question was asking particularly about phase 4 of Raksha on this. And they said it's tricky because bad pathing AI is core to RuneScape gameplay, which creates safe spotting.
It's not a flaw, it's a feature.
And it's like, where have we heard this before, and where has this impacted us recently? Oh, the Ripper Demons.
Mm-hmm.
And
bad pathing is how it's meant to be. Oh, man.
And the funny part is they said that it becomes a problem because specific encounters like Zuck are actually balanced around safe spotting. So people acknowledge that there's an issue with it, and people complain about it, but then we're relying on those features for bosses, and they're entirely right, because you can't do the Zuck fight if you don't safe spot.
Yeah, you could see how that could be a little confusing. You might be putting out some mixed messaging there.
Yeah.
Just a little.
And I wonder, you know, if at all, when he was answering this question, if the Rippers came up in his head. Because Mod Sponge, that's going to be his new name, I guess. Mod Sponge, is actually pretty smart when it comes to all this combat stuff.
So. Yeah, I'm sure it's probably like one of those, I can't believe I'm saying this right now, but I hope no one, figures it out.
What are you going to say? Yeah. Or what did you want to say?
What could you say, right? Like, I mean, what could you say? Like, we're kind of right on that.
Yeah. No new updates on Group Iron Man Dungeoneering, but no alt solo Virago is awaiting QA testing and release builds, which means that people will be able to solo Virago without going through extraordinary methods.
Yeah. I think soloing Virago would be an extraordinary thing in of itself.
So. It would be. It would be. And that's the level of power creeps that we're at and the level of skill associated with our games.
Yeah, I mean, that is pretty incredible. Pretty incredible skill and timing it would take for... I mean, it's just insane to think of bosses that were designed for team and elite teams at that, and people are,
oh yeah, like when somehow, we went to Virago around Christmas, we did it with three people, no problems, and I was the complete newbie on that, so and they could have duoed it without me, so
mm-hmm.
All right, will there be an achievements council? And in general, they say this is a gray area about achievements in game, and they're fully aware of this because sometimes achievements do fall through the cracks, and that's ultimately not a good thing, because a lot of the work on achievements that happens is actually due to the individual devs. So there's no pass that goes over a specific update and says it should have this kind of achievement, or maybe this is what a proper achievement is and this is a bad achievement. It's largely up to the individual developer to add achievements in with those updates, and that's something they want to improve on. Which is absurd when you think about it, because there's some achievements in game that are just absolutely bonkers.
Yeah, I think we talked about some of them. What was it, last week?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. So, hopefully that will come into play. And I think if they ever did do the complicated comp rework, this would have to be one of those questions that was asked.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any considerations that are taken when deleting old content from the game? Now, this was actually a bit of an interesting question to peer into Mod Jack's head here. Because he's happy that old school exists because it allows RS3 to update old content or in some cases remove it, like Romeo and Juliet. In general, Mod Jack said that he's reticent from deleting old content in the game, and he would prefer it to just exist off to the side where it wouldn't necessarily be encountered in the run-through of the game. That would be his personal preference on it for things like Romeo and Juliet and the Camelot stuff. How do you feel?
Allow me to translate. It depends on how much of a shit fit y'all throw about a certain piece of content being taken out. Notice there is I don't hear much of cry over mobilizing armies, right?
Yeah, or rat catchers.
Yeah, so...
Or the rat pits, rather.
You know, I mean, I don't have a big issue with it either, but I think he's... I mean, I do agree with him. If it can exist on the side, fine. If that is going to create too much technical debt to that will limit things in the future, then rip it out, because it's not worth that price.
Yeah, and he is right that old school allows them to, in effect, be a little bit more willy-nilly with just deleting stuff. So, Now here's something that we talk about, because it was asked about should the majority of pre-EOC NPCs be buffed, because they seem underbalanced when you compare it to what modern combat's capable of. And is combat too complex? And it's not a simple matter of just buffing the stats. Then XP and drops also become a question. And the example that they gave was that if they were to just make Dark Beasts, say, be arbitrarily 10 times harder, it would potentially impact people who, do, like you said, their daily Dark Beast Slayer task. So they have to make all kinds of considerations like that.
You know, to me, there's no reason to, right? If you weren't getting new bosses, okay, maybe we talk about redoing some of the older ones, but you're all getting a lot of new combat content. So it's not really any reason. If I want to go beat up some God of War 1 bosses, then leave me alone. Let me do that. Let me feel strong and powerful too once in a while, please. Like, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, they said if it was just a general sweep, it'd have to be done on a selection of bosses. And once again, they'd raise that entire question about what is too difficult, right? So that's why the pre-EOC bosses and pre-EOC NPC Slayer creatures haven't really been updated that much. And is combat too complex? And they actually have questions internally about whether or not somebody who's just starting out with the game should be able to just play the game with basic abilities, for example. And what kind of onboarding needs to be done with the combat stuff, which... You know, I think we're 100% aware of is that it's all very complicated what all the abilities do and which ones are best. That for anybody who wants to make an action bar and have one put together, it becomes a real issue with that. So
it does. And I never realized just how big of an issue it was until I had a friend of mine try RuneScape, and didn't work out real well for him because it was just too complex, too much, too fast, too complex.
Yeah. And that's something you hope the analytics will catch in aggregate. But I know we're putting out a video this Sunday, hopefully our first micro lesson about doing combat. The people at the round table last time saw it in one of its early draft forms, but we're ready to go with that. And you can expect to a stream of these about intro combat stuff on the way. So while we're on that combat bandwagon, that's there. Should the fractured staff of Armadale be made viable for Iron Man? And this is one of those questions that if you read it, you'd just think that these people are a little bit salty about the amount of money that you have to put in to make the staff. But when you look at the amount of water runes that it costs to actually run it for auto-casting something like Insight Fear, you're talking in the thousands per hour of water runes. And those are damn expensive. And they know that it's the rune cost. And they're actually looking at something internally regarding rune costs and runes that are going in and out of the economy, but they can't say anything on that right now, of course.
Yeah, you know, when questions like this come up, I can't help but to go to my knee-jerk reaction, which is, you're an Iron Man. It's supposed to be more challenging. But at the same time, more so than that, I don't want the content, you know, for the masses to be, you know, always have to think about, like, oh, what about the Iron Man? Like, yes, it's a concern. Yes, it needs some attention, but at the same time, like, it's going to be harder, right? Like, that's why it's an Iron Man, right? Like, that's,
yeah, that's the way the ball bounces.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying not to say it quite like that, but you hit the nail on the head there. Yeah. That's exactly how it breaks
and
out.
You know, that's why specifically some Iron Men will use ranged instead of mage as their combat preference of choice right now. So, there we go.
And wasn't it like, I don't know, 2 months ago and range was all the rage. It was the best. And so this between mage and range, there was an ebb and a flow, and I'm not sure it really makes that big of a difference on the margins, does it?
No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
You just pick one of them and go with it. Right. Obviously, if you're min-maxing magic, but it's aside the point. Here's another fun one. Could the persistent rage relic be made into a permanent upgrade, as in people are wanting their persistent rage relic that prevents adrenaline from draining to be made so you never lose adrenaline at all, regardless of whether or not there's a relic for it?
Then you're just taking away a mechanic that was supposed to be, like, no, and, right?
Right, but, like, no. But they actually had an interesting discussion about this one on the live stream, believe it or not. They said there's multiple ways that they can look at this, in particular, aside from the relic slots that it uses and the permanent unlocks, and that the Combat Council is actually discussing how the meta is now to start encounters with 100% adrenaline. And they say it's not the worst thing if we let players keep their adrenaline up, because otherwise it's just an annoyance. Because if not for this relic, then people are just stalling adrenaline. And if people are always stalling adrenaline, the thought from the Combat Council is that maybe this should be just embraced, and this is actually something that they're looking at resolving.
And I guess I want to know what the intent of adrenaline is and what it was, because it touches so much things. There's so many items that are adrenaline, you know, savers and this and that. And I don't know.
And, you know, I think what it comes down to is that adrenaline was supposed to be the ability, or rather the thing that would allow you to amplify your damage and then take it up one more with the threshold and then do something really special when you would get 100% in the ultimate. Of course, people at that time, and I'm talking about when EOC came out, they wanted their special attacks. But special attacks went the way the Dodo until only recently, when they were once again fully embraced with the essence of finality 18 months ago at this point, that adrenaline at this point, starting at 100%, if you're using ranged or magic, or even melee, you're going to most of the time open up with a Death Swiftness, Sunshine, or Berserk. And as a result of that, you're going in at 100%, but you're going to be going back down to zero and then working your way up with that. So I can see why that's the case. And, you know, I'm personally not a fan of the adrenaline stalling stuff, so persistent rage is actually one of the relic powers that I use with this. So I would be all on board with this. And that's my perspective. And I don't think it would necessarily harm things, because, like they said, everybody's already doing it.
Well, and then doesn't that, though, take away a reward from archaeology?
Yeah, they would have to do something different than persistent rage. They'd have to make that into something else, that would raise that question about, do I use this power or not? Because as we know with the Ring of Death, everybody is always equipping the Ring of Death. If your ring slot is always filled with a Ring of Death, it stops being a ring slot, right? So there needs to be that question of what can they do to get the Ring of Death off people's fingers? Much like if this is the meta out there, then they need to figure out what can they do to get persistent rage off of people's 100% relic stacks. So,
yeah, makes sense.
All right, moving back to quests. It was asked, can we get more diversity of quests now that the Elder God Wars storyline is wrapping up? I.e. storylines that have been hanging. Like, for example, they say what shouldn't happen is having the base storyline pause so there could be a desert quest or a gnome quest. And the two alternatives are to occasionally do some unrelated thing because there's a push to it and initial excitement to just tell the existing story. But the other alternative is to just roll these into the existing storylines, and this is the way they've been going. And a joke that Mod Jack did with people in the lore Discord was they said, what if the Elder God was Arpasadra? And it's a really interesting question. What if they released a quest or two in the middle of this Elder God Wars arc and they paused it for a couple months and we'd be 2 months behind where we are now? How would we feel about that?
Yeah.
So, as much as I want the gnomes, I feel like their idea of rolling them into the existing storyline is the way to go, honestly. Despite the idea that it'd be fun to have it go back to these storylines, let's just say.
Well, and we've waited this long. I think, like I said, I can see, you know, the gnomes could be, instead of like when we're thinking, I mean, you could do it with the races of Gilnor, but you could do it with the land, like with the regions and location as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And where you could entertain that, you know, you could, that could be a storyline within that region or whatever, that could be added to when that part was being focused on.
Yep.
I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Then some final low-hanging fruit here. Proc rate of Heslemir's effect, 1 in 1,000 chance to double any loot that you get. And drop tables for the Rex Matriarchs were not posted in December, so they just rattled them off on this live stream. There's two tables unique to the Matriarch themselves and the general table for all three of them. It's 1 out of 200 for the hearts, 1 in 500 for the player-owned farm egg, 1 in 500 for a specific spear piece, or 4 out of 500 for any spear piece. 1 in 200 for the Berserker Heart, and 1 in 200 for the Ancient Skill or Draconic Energy. So, not very common, but not stupid rare.
Yeah.
All right. And one final note, they are planning to put out a lot more traditional behind-the-scenes content, though this doesn't necessarily mean month-ahead videos. And one thing that the entire team is happy about is hitting the monthly release dates, which means being able to reveal more of the plans that are coming ahead in the future. Which is interesting that they said hitting the monthly release dates, because we know that going back to when 120 Farming and 120 Herblore came out, and later Archaeology, those were some of the last two updates that almost had to be shifted. And since then, we've been in pandemic. But following from that, it's just been a focus of actually hitting these release dates and getting the entire team working on such a schedule that they were able to do that. And now that they're on that, they're actually able to do these behind-the-scenes pieces of content, which is interesting, I think.
Yeah, well, I think it's going to actually, it'll be helpful, too. Like, for all the reasons we explained earlier.
It comes down to building that trust, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Which is so important in this day and age.
It is.
but that was the modcast. I went through most of the questions, I think, that had an impact. I didn't transcribe down answers for each of them. So if you want to see the notes, you can find those at update.rsbnb.com. But we're going to move into our picks of the week right now and then do some achievements. So I have a pick of the week, and this is a Mac piece of software. And the reason I wanted to share this one is because, you know, I don't know about you, but I'm not a fan of subscription software. I prefer one price right up front, buy it and you own it for good, right? Or until you need to upgrade the version. And a lot of software out there, especially Adobe, has been doing this recently with Photoshop and whatnot.
Yeah.
And that's really annoying. But there is an answer to that. If you're on macOS, for $40, $30 if you're in the US, it's more in Canada, you can get this piece of software called Pixelmator Pro. It works on macOS, and they even have iOS versions as well. You can use it on an iPad. Ooh. It's effectively Photoshop, but with a much more human-friendly UI for $40, and you only have to buy it once.
That's what I'm talking about.
And it's got some features that people want to use when they're touching up photos in this day and age, like remove the background from any image by just pressing a button. Select a specific subject in the image if you need to increase the brightness of that subject. You can use Smart Refine to turn a rough selection around an object into a precise selection, like if you're selecting out a person. And alongside of that, there's really wonderful A-B editing, where if you wanted to use this to edit photos, to just add a bit more splash to them. But it also allows for vector drawing. Normally, when we work in Photoshop, we work with what's called bitmap images, which is editing the actual pixels. But one of the things that is so wonderful to do in this day and age is called vector graphics, which basically means that it can be scaled up to any size. And to do that with Adobe Suite, you need a separate piece of software, Adobe Illustrator. But with this one, Pixelmator can do this as well. It also allows for you to do design work, like if you're building out a newsletter. It's got layers and guides, the same...
Damn, $40?
The same set of tools that Photoshop has. You can even connect it up to an iPad with your Mac. If you have a Mac and an iPad, you can use your iPad and Apple Pencil as a tablet and draw and actually physically paint as if it were a real canvas, and it will react to that pressure.
Oh, that is, I can't believe it's $40.
And UI,
Adobe's like $40 a month or something like
that. Yeah. You know? And that's just for Photoshop.
Yeah.
And you can completely customize the UI with it. I have been moving over some of the work that we do here around the podcast to this. There's things I can't move over because it's tied into Adobe Premiere, but I am always for pieces of software that you only buy once and that you don't need to necessarily worry about, am I going to have to pay a yearly subscription for this? Is it going to get updated? Are they going to add new features that's not going to make it work? There's just so many wonderful features in this when it comes to fonts. Editing, so that you can do editing non-destructively. I don't know. It feels like what Photoshop should be if Photoshop was built from the ground up in 2021. And it's a Mac-first application. It works on the Intel and the Apple Silicon stuff. And there is a separate version if you have an iPad and you use only an iPad that you can get. So if you are a Mac user, pick this up. It's really neat. I use it. I have it. So, pixelmator.com. And
cool.
This is a bit of pick of the week that I feel just has been needed to have been done.
It sounds like it, yeah.
Oh, they even have just a photo editor for iPhone. So if you want to edit photos that you take on your iPhone and you just want the photo editing features, they have one that you can get for that as well.
So that's cool.
Oh, that one's only $8.
Yeah.
And the one for iOS is $5. And see, this is why I still like macOS despite complaining about it sometimes. There are these gems of software that you just can't get on Windows. And that's why it's pick of the week. Pixelmator Pro.
Nice.
All right, what's yours?
Well, my pick of the week this week is called Ant Stream Arcade. So for anybody that is into the old arcade games, if you can remember back to, you know, when there were arcades and stuff, this is kind of like a platform. You can get it on the Epic Games Store. It will be coming to Steam very soon. It's basically a platform where you can play all these old arcade games, very, very much like if you're familiar with like the setting up a main emulator on your computer. This takes all that work out. Yeah, it takes all that work out for you, and you can just go and play the game. You know, you get like a certain amount of what they call gems to start with, and then you get like 60 of them a day to for a login bonus. The games, like, it costs you a certain amount of those gems to play the game, but you can play it as much as you want until you
change. It's like taking the quarters to the arcade.
Yeah. 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 I've had some fun with it, just playing all these old games that I used to take my babysitting money to the arcade and play. So,
yeah. Oh. Yeah. I remember walking by those. And, you know, it, based on what it looks like here on the Epic Store, it preserves that same aesthetic as well.
It does. Like, it's funny because I remember being in the arcade and playing Pit Fighter, and then I saw it on the AntStream arcade, and I was playing. I'm like, and it was just what I remembered. Like, it was just as bad as I remembered, but it was just as fun as,
and I imagine,
you know, just.
I imagine if you wanted to, you could get one of those legacy controllers as well and connect that up too, if you wanted the true experience.
I would imagine so.
Yeah. So. Oh, that Pac-Man, that's there. Interesting. So it's not just iterations. They got actual old games.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, these are the actual old games. And there's even a few, you know, kind of rare ones. Like, there are some Super Nintendo games that were put on arcade cabinets, but you never see them, and they're actually there as well. So,
and I assume it's monetized by purchasing extra gems if you need it, right?
Yeah, and then, I mean, there's a subscription that's
right,
really actually pretty cheap, like yearly. That makes it all unlimited.
$51 Canadian for a 1-year subscription.
Yeah, and that's like all play all, you know, all you want.
How many gems do you get per day, and is that enough?
Well, you get 60, and each game pretty much costs 30.
Okay, so that's like 2 games a day, basically.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, you don't play necessarily every day, so I'll just log in, pop that up, and then.
Right.
You know,
and I imagine the gems stack so you can bank them, so to speak.
Yep. Okay. Exactly.
All right. Yep. Yeah. All right. So that's on Epic, and it'll be on Steam soon if you're anti Epic, but the link is in the show notes to the Epic Game Store on that one. All right. Nicely done. That's exactly an RSBNB update pick of the week. Moving on to Yeah, very much so. Moving on to our achievements. Starting off, we have Dane Cry with 99 Archaeology on the 9th. Dat Engineer also got 120 Smithing on the 9th. Continuing on the 9th, we have Delta Polo with 99 Magic. GMND 52 with 120 Mining. Then on the 8th, we have Delta Polo with 99 Slayer. GMND 52 with 120 Woodcutting. Kinky Sliske with 99 Archaeology. Lord Gimli with 120 Constitution. Big Diggy with 99 Invention on the 7th. Is a Wrap with 120 Defense, and Skips with 99 Fletching, also on the 7th.
Nice, nice. We'll keep Kinky Sliske away from Big Tigs. Anyway, moving on, we have Kedgeworth with 99 Archaeology on the 6th. We have Zodia Child with 200 mil Constitution on the 6th. We have Iskato 2 with 120 Slayer on February 4th. All right. Necro Devils with 99 Thieving on the 4th. Uber Plastic with 99 Dungeoneering on the 4th. Exam Gum with 99 Mining on February 4th. Alosif with 99 Dungeoneering on the 3rd. At Mohua with 99 Strength on the 3rd. With 99 Smithing on the 3rd. And then the Lazy Colonel with 99 Dungeoneering. on the third, and Waffens with 99 runecrafting on the third.
Nicely done. Nicely done, everybody. Calm before the storm. Double XP on the way. It's going to be an interesting one to see, I think. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Calm before the storm, indeed. What have we been up to on our S? You want to go first?
Yeah. I started the very long process of making Elden Ring plate bodies. We'll see how many I can get made by the 18th. And gonna see how much money we can make off of them. So that's kind of what I've been pretty much caught up with since last week.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see that process because that's definitely a long-term thing, I think.
Yeah, very much so.
And I'd imagine a lot of it was probably done AFK as well.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I have to have something to do while I'm watching this wonderful Star Trek series called Enterprise.
Oh boy, you're poking the big Earth there. Should he eventually hear this and come back on the show?
I'm poking the tardy ad.
Wrong series.
Well, I know another one of his favorites. So.
Right. All right. Anything else?
Nope. How about you, Shane?
Done some wood cutting. I'm slowly chipping away at it, still doing the elders. But aside from that, just alternating between that and daily Reaper tasks and such. On the main, and what I've found is that if I'm not actively doing PVM, you fall into this circle where if you're not doing PVM, you're preparing to do PVM in terms of making sure that the potions are in stock, the food is in stock, everything is ready to go, that sort of thing. That's kind of the rhythm that I've been falling into. I also did some slight adjustments to my gear perking this week. Picked up a combination of the Relentless and Crackling perk, which, for anybody unaware what that does, offers you a chance of making it so that your adrenaline doesn't drain when using an ability and zaps your enemy fairly regularly, about every minute or so. And the other one I picked up was an Impatient combo, and Impatient has a chance of allowing you to gain extra adrenaline. Those were two that I were missing on the armor set of perks. So I picked those up, and one of them was supposed to be only a 1 in 3 chance. So I figured, yeah, we're going to need to get some extra Zaros components for that. So I leveled 2 wands in a book, and I got it 1 in 3 on my first roll. So chances are with that, I'll be able to actually do it for another combat style when I decide to as well, because I had enough Zaros components after that, because I got that 1 in 3 roll on the first one when it could have been either just Impatient or mobile based on that. So that was a pleasant thing to see. But more on perks in the coming weeks, I think, on that. And on the alt, just getting ready for double XP, getting the mining level up. And I think the alt focus for double XP is going to be unlocking invention and just bringing all the skills up a bit. So that's what I've been working on. Mining and smithing on the alt, interestingly enough. Before we began here, I just hit 50 smithing and did the divine caches, which, you know, people like those divine caches, but they're honestly wretched pieces of content themselves.
Yeah, I'm not
a fan.
The
fact that you have to train divination that way, still, just absurd.
I've never really been...
At least until you get to 80 plus and you get the luminous and later incandescent energy, right? So
yeah.
But that's what I've been up to, and should be an interesting time this weekend. Maybe try Karapak hard mode, Rakshas solo, or maybe something else. We'll see. But I think that's pretty much it for this episode of Update. I don't think there's anything else that we have to bring forward to you guys. Hopefully, you guys enjoyed our merry little adventure this week. If you want to find us on any podcast listener, we're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, Amazon, Pocket Cast, Stitcher, and more. And of course, we're also on YouTube at youtube.com/RSBNB. Please do leave us a like and subscribe there. It greatly helps the channel out. And if you want to subscribe to the audio on any of those services, just visit update.rsbnb.com/subscribe. And with that being said, we'll be back next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. Take care, everyone. See you then.
See ya.